nuggets on our display this morning, but that's absolutely fine. So today we're looking at the story of Zacchaeus, and it's a story that will be familiar to many of us, not least perhaps from a Sunday school song that you may have sung as children. And I think it goes something along the lines of, Zacchaeus was a very little man, and a very little man was he. He climbed up in a sycamore tree for the Lord he wanted to see. And it's a jolly little song, it's a jolly little story about a man who meets Jesus, changes his ways, and lives a better life. And that's the simple version, the children's version. But as adults, when we approach this story of Zacchaeus, then there are some thought-provoking aspects that we need to face. So as always, when we come to a story in the Bible, we need to understand the context. And Jesus has been on his way to Jericho and is passing through. And the story of Zacchaeus follows hard on the heels of the story of Jesus healing a blind man on the way into Jericho. And I think with a story like the healing of the blind man, then it's something that we respond to very readily, where we see God's compassion in action. We see the Messiah who, as we talked about in our first part, one of the things the Messiah was going to do was bring sight to the blind. So Jesus has done this. So we've seen one of society's vulnerable people helped by God, and we readily respond to that. But Zacchaeus is a different character altogether. If you have a look at Luke chapter 19 and verses 1 and 2, Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and he was wealthy. I don't suppose that many of us today enjoy our encounters with Her Majesty's revenue and customs. And in the time of Jesus, it wasn't a lot different. They didn't like paying taxes then either. But the situation was even more complicated in the time of Jesus, because having to pay taxes to a local ruler or to Rome was a reminder that the Jewish people lived in an occupied land. God had promised this land to them, but it wasn't theirs to live in freely. And it was also the case that tax collection was open to abuse. So I did a bit of research on this, and what I'm going to tell you now, experts may correct me on this, and if there are any experts here, they can put things right afterwards. But from what I discovered, that in parts of the Roman Empire, the collection of taxes was put up for auction every year. And tax collectors would bid for the right to collect taxes in a particular area. So what it means is that the collection of taxes was done by individuals on behalf of the empire or a local ruler. And sometimes these tax collectors had to actually pay the whole amount in advance. So they had to have some wealth in the first place. But in order to get back what they had made and to make a profit, they could try and extract as much as they could out of the people that they were taxing. So tax collection could be a very lucrative business if you were ruthless enough. And then there were other types of taxes that were collected in different ways. So you had to pay taxes on things that were sold, or when you were travelling, or when you were going through borders, etc. And it's not clear from this what type of taxes Zacchaeus collected. But because we're told that he was a chief tax collector and was wealthy, then we know that he enjoyed power, he had riches, And as the story goes on, we see that at least some of his power and riches had been gained by exploiting his fellow Jews. So Zacchaeus is a man who has betrayed his people. He sided with the occupying forces, and he is exploiting his people. Verses 3 and 4. Zacchaeus wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. Zacchaeus, for reasons which are not spelled out, wants to see Jesus. Now, in Jewish society at the time, if you were in a position of power, you would normally be shown deference. So if you were trying to make your way through a crowd and you were a person of high status, a crowd would normally part to let you through. But when Zacchaeus, who is a small man, attempts to see Jesus, he runs into trouble. He can't see Jesus over the crowd. It sounds as if the crowd is making no concessions to him. He's hated. The crowd is not going to part for Zacchaeus. And Zacchaeus is wise enough to know what type of situations to stay away from. So he's wise enough to know it's not going to be a good idea to try and force his way through the crowd. And he does two things that are simply not done in Middle Eastern society. Verse 4, he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree. And these were things that you really didn't do. You'll know that I've been using this book as material for my sermons. And Kenneth E. Bailey, the New Testament scholar who lived in the Middle East for many years, he says that Middle Eastern adults do not run in public life if they wish to avoid public shame. And rich, powerful men do not climb trees at public parades. And he tells a story of the American ambassador to Cairo at the time of President Kennedy, a gentleman called John Badeau, who records in his memoirs that he once climbed a tree in the back garden of the ambassador's walled residence in order to fix some lights for an embassy garden party. This private act became known and caused such a stir that Badeau was soon asked by a very puzzled President Nasser if the story were true. Nasser had heard the unbelievable tale and was so amazed he felt the need to check its veracity with the ambassador himself. In the Middle East, powerful, prominent men do not climb trees, even in the privacy of their own walled garden. So Zacchaeus is absolutely determined to see Jesus. He's breaking these social norms, running ahead, climbing a tree. And sycamore fig trees, if I can get this to work. Oh, back. I'll try again. There we go. Sycamore trees apparently have very large leaves and low branches, so they form a kind of tent. They're easy to climb, but they also enable the person climbing them to remain hidden. And Zacchaeus probably thought that in a tree like this, he could see Jesus while remaining hidden from those who hated him. As I said, we don't know why Zacchaeus is so desperate to see Jesus. He may have heard that Jesus associates with tax collectors and sinners. And maybe there's something in him that's yearning for peace and acceptance after all these years of being ostracized by his fellow Jews. We don't know, we can only speculate. But what we see is this man who's determined to catch a glimpse of Jesus and use highly unconventional means to do so. And then, horror of horrors, his plan goes disastrously wrong, because somehow Jesus knows he's there and he exposes him. If you have a look at verse 5, when Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately." I wonder if you can almost hear the surprise and possibly the glee as the crowd look up and see in the branches of the tree Zacchaeus. And what a ripple of ridicule and malice might have run through the crowd at that point, because this isn't that comical man from the children's Sunday school song. This is the object of a community's hatred. And the crowd has caught him out in a ridiculous position. And there's safety in numbers. They can all jeer at him. They're not going to be identified. And I wonder what was said in animosity and bitterness as the crowd followed Jesus' gaze and saw the man they hated concealed in a tree, of all places. And yet note how in the second part of verse 5, Jesus' response is, "I must stay at your house today. I must stay at your house today." I wonder how you would feel, maybe, if there was a royal visit to the Potteries. And maybe you'd got your place in the crowd lining the streets and you were madly waving your flag as the royal party approached, when suddenly a royal personage looked up to where, clutching a lamppost, there was a dodgy councillor, somebody who everybody knew had been taking bribes, maybe for a planning application that had gone through and ruined people's lives and their well-being. And as you start to jeer and express your hatred for this person who is ridiculously hanging on for dear life on the lamppost, you hear the royal person say, "Come down from there. Let's have afternoon tea." What? This ruthless councillor who's hurt so many people, doesn't royalty realise who this is? Now, hospitality in the time of Jesus was a serious matter and it had many rules. So Jesus not only breaks with convention by inviting himself to stay with Zacchaeus instead of being invited, but by sharing a meal with him, Jesus is showing that he is willing to accept Zacchaeus. Verse 6, "So he, Zacchaeus, came down at once and welcomed him gladly. And all the people saw this and began to mutter, 'He has gone to be the guest of a sinner.'" I wonder, going back to our fictitious royal visit, what would have gone through your mind as the councillor was invited to take tea with royalty? You might have felt a surge of anger at the injustice of this preference that's being shown. Maybe you would feel deep disappointment at the royal person for making such a bad choice. Maybe it means they're not the kind of wise and gracious person you thought they were. Time and again in the Gospels, we see Jesus taking risks. The risk of being misunderstood, the risk of having people's hostility turned on him because of who he associates with, the risk of rejection. And why does he do this? We need to look at the glorious conclusion to this story. Very tantalisingly, Luke doesn't tell us what took place at the banquet. He doesn't talk about a conversation between Jesus and Zacchaeus. We don't even know if there was much of a conversation. It may be simply that because Jesus accepted Zacchaeus, it was enough for Zacchaeus to come to that point of changing his life. Whatever happened or didn't happen, whatever was said or wasn't said, the result, as we see in verse 8, is that Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I've cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount. In those days, if you wanted to make a point, you exaggerated. If you try doing the maths on what Jesus has said, it doesn't add up. Zacchaeus simply wouldn't have had all that money to pay back. But he's trying to make the point. He's had this life-changing experience of an encounter with Jesus, and he wants to show that he's a changed man. And then I wonder if you catch that tone of utter delight in Jesus' response. Verse 9. Today, salvation has come to this house because this man too is a son of Abraham. I think that's the tone of voice we actually catch in the things that Jesus says in many places in the Gospels when people's lives turn around. And why is he so joyful at these moments? Well, in verse 10 he says, "For the Son of Man came to seek and to save what was lost." The Son of Man came to seek and to save what was lost. And today we've been thanking God for our harvest, haven't we? And that's a right and a good thing to do, because God has made this wonderful and bountiful world which we all enjoy. But of course there's another type of harvest which we also remember at harvest time, and this is the harvest of souls. And Jesus spoke about this harvest when he sent up disciples to go ahead of him into the villages where he was going to preach. Jesus said, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." And his motivation throughout his ministry was to bring people into a relationship with God. People like Zacchaeus, who may have strayed very, very far from the God who had called his people and given them the way to live. But Jesus wanted people like Zacchaeus to regain a place in God's family, to become true sons and daughters of Abraham. This is the harvest he was talking about, and it's the harvest that he still wants to bring in. He himself has died so that people can be forgiven and free and know God as their Father. And this is where we come to the uncomfortable bit. There's always an uncomfortable bit when we study the life of Jesus, because he challenges us so deeply. I've often thought, I'm sure it was a wonderful thing to meet Jesus face to face, but I bet it was like having your soul exposed. I bet it was like having all your weaknesses brought into the light. Jesus was always challenging people, even godly people who thought that they were doing the right things and trying to please God. So as followers of Jesus in the 21st century, in a society that's pretty indifferent to the gospel, as we read this encounter with Jesus, with Zacchaeus, the tax collector who was exploiting his fellow Jews, we perhaps need to think, what questions does Jesus ask of us? What challenging questions might he ask? And I'm going to hopefully put them on screen. Douglas, if you could pop the questions up. Who is the equivalent of Zacchaeus in our society? And maybe the next question. Who would you as a Christian find it difficult to associate with? And a third question. How does Jesus' attitude towards Zacchaeus challenge you? Because in theory we love everybody, don't we? But in practice, if you're anything like me, then you find it difficult to show love to some people. And I think this story, along with many others in the Gospels, is very challenging to me, because it shows Jesus accepting somebody before they've changed their life. Jesus didn't confront Zacchaeus with everything that he'd done wrong and wait for him to change his ways before going and spending time with him. Jesus invited himself to eat and sleep at the house of Zacchaeus without uttering a word about him changing his ways. And we could argue that Jesus saw into people's hearts, so he knew Zacchaeus was on the point of repenting. But was that always the case? Did every tax collector and sinner who Jesus had a meal with change their ways? It's unlikely. Did everybody who had a conversation with Jesus become a new person? Well, we know that's not the case because of the reaction he had from the rich young ruler in another story. But as I said, Jesus was prepared to take the risk. He showed acceptance to people, even to those who were socially unacceptable, because it mattered so much to him that people had the chance to discover God's love and God's grace. The offer came first. The change of lifestyle was an optional response that came later. And so we're challenged to think about our own attitudes. We're challenged to think about what type of person, if they walk through the door next Sunday morning, would you or I find it difficult to invite back to lunch? Which of our neighbours do you or I find it difficult to genuinely smile at? Who at our workplaces makes us feel so uncomfortable we wouldn't like to share a drink in the pub with them? Well, our God in human form gladly associated with people who were barred from society, and he took that risk because he wanted them to know that no one is excluded from the possibility of being blessed by God. He did it because he wanted people at the end of time to enjoy the heavenly kingdom. God is that host who wants his house to be full. And Jesus did it because he himself was prepared to meet the cost of human wrongdoing, sacrificing himself so that others could know God's forgiveness and walk free. And so as we read this story of Zacchaeus, if we can move the slides on. Can we have the next one and the one after? Thanks. Okay. We perhaps need to ask ourselves that very difficult question. How will the harvest of souls ever be gathered in if God's people do not understand and in turn demonstrate the costly grace of our Saviour? How will the harvest of souls ever be gathered in if God's people do not understand and in turn demonstrate the costly grace of their Saviour? And so may we be prepared to show love and acceptance to all who need to know that the Son of Man came to seek and to save what was lost. Amen.